Our next presenter is David Day from Brigham Young University. Brigham Young, in collaboration with the Audio Archive and Millenniata, is undertaking a pilot project for digital audio preservation utilizing the Millenniata M-ARC disc, an optical media rated for hundreds of years. The objective of the study is to ascertain the feasibility of long-term preservation of digital audio files and accompanying metadata using the M-ARC discs as the preservation media. Eric Jacobs, that's been collaborating this project from the Audio Archive, was originally scheduled to present a technical analysis on the longevity and practicality of the MARC disc, but was unfortunately unable to attend the conference. But we are very fortunate that David came and is here to present to you, as soon as his computer recognizes it. David is currently the curator of music special collections at Brigham Young University's Harold B. Lee Library. In this role, he oversees the Music Recordings Archive, a modest sound collection of about 180,000 items. He received his PhD in musicology from New York University in 2008 and the MS in library science from the University of North Carolina in 1985. So once we're connected up, I will give you David. Here's David.
Okay, thank you. I begin today with an apology that there's a minor adjustment to the topic of my presentation as shown in the conference program. When I originally proposed my title some months ago, I intended to focus entirely on our use of the Millenniata M-Disc. Originally, Eric Jacobs of the Audio Archive and I intended a joint presentation, he focusing on the more technical aspects of the disc and I focusing on its use in our specific situation at Brigham Young University. Regrettably, Eric was not able to attend this year's conference. In his absence, I will attempt to offer some basic comments on the technical side of the disc. In the course of my preparations, I also decided it would be more interesting to a broader audience to include two other options for digital preservation currently under consideration at BYU. I will, however, stay focused in more detail on the Millenniata disc. I should also make several important disclaimers. First, I am in no way connected with Millenniata commercially, and it is not my intention to make an endorsement of their product. I should also disclose up front that the technology behind the M-Disc was originally developed at BYU, though I had nothing to do with that project. Furthermore, while I work in the library at Brigham Young University, my comments are not represented, do not represent any official policies of the institution. I am only offering my observations from the rank and file of directions our administration appears to support at this point in time. I received much of my information through my participation in the library's Digital Preservation Committee. And finally, I should note that none of our potential long-term preservation solutions are currently fully operational at BYU. Any discussion of long-term or permanent digital preservation of audio materials should acknowledge a few major milestones in research, guidelines, and best practices. I will only mention in passing the YASA documents TC03 and TC04. I will refer more specifically to the work of ARSC's own technical committee, Preservation of Audio Sound Recordings, Version 1, from April 2009. In the course of my presentation, I will also refer to Sound Directions, Best Practices for Audio Preservation, published in 2007. The key recommendations in both of these documents that will be most relevant to my remarks today is the suggestion that, now and in the future, long-term digital preservation should focus primarily on server-based institutional digital repositories. This recommendation is based on an assumption that these large and complex systems will automate the ongoing migration of digital formats to future generations, thereby eliminating the necessity of costly manual rotation of container-based options. In the course of my presentation, I hope to show how even the best-funded and administratively supported institutional repositories may face obstacles to the assumed advantages of this approach. I will also argue for reevaluation of simple, more basic means of preservation. It is not my intention to be confrontational or provocative. Rather, I only hope to promote open discussion enlightened by practical experience. The three options for long-term digital preservation currently under evaluation at BYU include two server-based solutions. We are currently using ContentDM, digital collection management software produced by OCLC. Rosetta, a product of Ex Libris, is in preparation for implementation. I will comment on the pros and cons of these two systems and will then compare advantages and disadvantages of the Millenniata M-Disc. I will also attempt to show how these three options are characteristic of solutions currently under consideration at many institutions. Before launching into an examination of these products, I would like to establish a context of why a long-term or permanent solution to digital preservation is so important. I will make that case by first commenting on the shortcomings of temporary solutions used out of expediency in many institutions and businesses. I suspect that very few, if any, audio archives currently have unlimited access to the recommended repositories with fluid digital migration. The Sound Direction Guidelines offer suggestions in both local interim and permanent preservation once the digital conversion process is completed. Best practice statements 31 through 33 offer the following advice in relation to interim preservation, the level of preservation that is most susceptible to loss. These statements underscore the need for an immediate preservation measure independent of larger institutional systems. In the context of BYU, our current measures for short-term preservation of digital files consist of a mix of redundant external hard drives, limited server space, and optical media. Let's look first at the use of external hard drives. At BYU, I have tried to organize files stored in this manner in redundant pairs of drives. I know there are more sophisticated RAID configurations. For lack of access to necessary expertise and additional financial resources, I have simply organized separately mirrored, inexpensive hard drives. Limited access to server storage is another option I use at BYU. In this regard, we are somewhat fortunate, and our allocation of space is relatively generous. But it is not sufficient to preserve all of the audio we have converted to digital files. We currently have access to 3 terabytes of server space, but even this comes with both financial and political costs. I am told that the cost to BYU, the BYU library, to maintain server space is about $1,200 per terabyte per year. In our current situation, we are then paying $3,600 per year to simply store a selection of our preservation files. At present, the library is permitted to maintain its own server space, but we are advised on a regular basis that the university may require the library to abandon its server operations and pay for comparable space through the university's computing services. It is understood that in the event of such a migration, a weeding of the server data could occur. In such a scenario, the selection of the data to remove might involve political negotiations. Library administrators already question the need to preserve high-resolution files if the public is adequately served with smaller MP3 or FLAC files. I suspect this problem is likewise applicable to the recommended permanent solutions. The third alternative for temporary digital preservation is optical media. Including regular DVD and CD discs. Our experience at BYU using these optical media for preservation storage has been very disappointing. I have generally tried to avoid it for audio preservation because my colleagues in other areas of the library have reported significant loss in attempts to store other kinds of data. To make a summary of assessment of our interim storage solutions at BYU, we have access to server space, but that space is not adequate for our needs. Also, the future of the library's management of its own servers is uncertain. I have avoided the use of regular optical disks because other areas of the library report significant failure rates. As a result, of the limitations of these two solutions, we are currently coping with inexpensive, redundant external hard drives, which we know are subject to eventual mechanical failure. Having painted a less than ideal picture of our interim preservation measures, let's now look at the options BYU is considering for permanent long-term storage. Here I believe it is fair to state that the solutions we hope for are still works in progress, going through the normal series of bureaucratic deliberations. The solution that is ultimately selected will be enormously expensive, and therefore careful deliberations are appropriate. Rosetta is a commercial product that I am told will cost several million dollars to purchase and implement. The cost is prohibitive even for most universities. In fact, BYU is able to consider Rosetta only because the school's sponsor, the LDS Church, is evaluating the product as a solution for managing and preserving millions of images from their family history program and church history archives. This partnership in the making has both advantages and disadvantages. The obvious positive side is the financial and infrastructure support of the LDS Church. While the status of the LDS Church's implementation of the product is not fully communicated to us on the Digital Preservation Committee, it does appear we will begin testing our access to the system sometime in fall semester of this year. It is anticipated that the LDS Church will maintain the system at its headquarters in Salt Lake City, along with all the necessary support staff and extensive storage. BYU will access the system remotely. I have explained this relationship in some detail because I think it is indicative of a problematic distance and lack of control in negotiating access to this kind of recommended solution. I think it is also useful to point out and keep in mind that while Rosetta is billed as a system that can migrate and systematically update digital data, it is not publicly accessible. It will require additional Ex Libris products, such as DigiTools or Primo, to act as a digital assets management system or public search interface. These additional products are also very costly and require substantial technical support for implementation. At this point, it is not clear at BYU how the university will attempt to interface with what is otherwise a sort of dark and cold storage. Many other universities are currently pursuing similar repositories. From my limited perspective, it appears there is a great deal of customization found in each institution's solution. Some are pursuing models of institutional repositories. Such systems are meant as alternative means of publishing or disseminating scholarly research, often in competition with expensive scientific journals. Other approaches are strictly preservation-oriented, with no intention to make the digital assets accessible to the public. I am not aware of any digital repository that is fully operational and that has been tested for its ability to migrate generations of digital formats. If there is such an operation, you can tell us about it during the questions and comment period. These limitations of Rosetta and the diversity of approaches found at different institutions provide a segue into the next option of digital assets management available at BYU. ContentDM is a product developed and supported by OCLC that does offer the features that are lacking in Rosetta. One very important advantage of ContentDM is the ability to link the digital object with both descriptive and technical metadata. But it is not a true permanent digital preservation repository in the sense that it does not offer the capabilities of automated verification and update. The final long-term solution I will discuss today is the Millenniata M-Disc. As I have already emphasized, this solution does not fit the standard set by the ARSC Technical Committee's report on preservation or the best practices of sound directions, because it cannot be migrated in an automated fashion. It is container-specific. As you will see in a minute, the disc itself will probably outlast the practical life of DVD players. Although it does occur to me that automated migration of the discs is perhaps possible, it might be achieved through a jukebox or robotic system. Before I attempt a conclusive evaluation of its feasibility for long-term preservation, I will first attempt to make a summary of its technology. I will also report on tests that have shown the disk should have a lifespan of hundreds of years. The M-disk differs from regular DVDs, sometimes used as an interim backup in audio preservation. The principal difference is that the reflective or dye layers of regular disks are replaced with a stone or rock-like composite. The Millenniata disks also require a proprietary writer, equipped with a stronger laser used to burn actual holes in the composite layer. I apologize that I know less about the plastic substrate layers common to both kinds of disks. I suspect there must be some difference. This slide provided by Millenniata claims that the M-disk can be dipped repeatedly and alternatively into boiling water and freezing liquid nitrogen without damage. You can see the Millenniata disk and then the normal disk. This slide, also provided by Millenniata, emphasizes the fact that the laser actually burns holes into the composite layer. Perhaps the most solid professional documentation of the M-disk's longevity is the result of the accelerated life cycle comparison conducted by the Naval Air Warfare Center at China Lake, California, in November 2009. I quote from the summary of the report. The NAWCWD Life Cycle and Environmental Engineering Branch at China Lake performed an accelerated aging test of archival media from Millenniata Inc., August through October 2009. This test compared discs from Millenniata to current archival-grade DVDs by evaluating their stability when exposed to combined light, heat, and humidity. This was done in accordance with the archival optical media test plan created by Millenniata. None of the Millenniata media suffered any data degradation at all. Every other brand tested showed large increases in data errors after the stress period. Many of the discs were so damaged that they could not be recognized as DVDs by the disk analyzer. So this graph was provided by Millenniata and illustrates the superior performance of the M-disks in the China Lake testing. The green bars represent the pre-stress testing of the various DVD discs. The blue and red bars represent the error rate after the stress period or stress test. Note that all the regular DVDs failed while none of the M-disks failed. This chart was also generated from the China Lake testing. It shows the high variability of error rates found in the pretest, based on the model of DVD drive used to burn the disks. They used this data to make a case for their proprietary M-drive to record the M-disks. Not only is a special, more powerful laser necessary, but Millenniata also argues the proprietary drive ensures a higher level of data integrity in the encoding process. I do need to make it clear, however, that once written by the M-drive, M-disk can be accessed by any DVD reader. The proprietary drive is necessary to burn the disks, but not to read them and recover the data. It's a standard DVD format. I repeat my opening disclaimer that I am not a representative of Millenniata. I can report, however, that our experience and testing at BYU has shown this product to be reliable and true to its claims. In assessing the ultimate question of my presentation, is the M-disk a viable solution for long-term preservation, four factors may influence the answer. The first factor is, how much does it cost? Unfortunately, the product is not yet a household commodity, and the asking price fluctuates. It also depends largely on how many disks you purchase at a time. BYU only purchases 100 or so disks at a time, and currently we are paying about $15 per disk. We are probably still getting a good discount. In a pilot project to determine how the M-disk might be employed in audio preservation at BYU, I determined that in my particular workflow, one 4.7 gigabyte disk would be needed for each half hour of audio converted to 24-bit 96 kilohertz. The master BWF file requires 1 gigabyte of space. I also want to preserve the Pro Tools edit session, the corresponding CD resolution tracks, and FLAC files for patron access. This will come close to filling each disk with a half hour of audio. I can understand the arguments for keeping only the preservation masters. In that scenario, more than 2 hours of audio could be kept on each disk. If in this more economical scenario, you store 4.7 gigabytes of data on each disk, 1 terabyte of storage would cost about $3,200 at our price of $15 per disk. This is significantly more than 1 terabyte of storage for 1 year. But if the disk lasts 3 years, it has more than paid for itself. And if it lasts 10, 20, 100, or 200 years, it is enormously cost-effective. The second factor, how long will the DVD format remain in service? How long will DVD readers remain common to the public? Will subsequent formats, such as the Blu-ray disc, remain backward compatible? Or will Millenniata still be around in 50 years, providing some means of backward compatibility? Any attempt to answer these questions is probably pure speculation. The third factor is how much freedom will audio archives have in funding and pursuing preservation measures outside institutionally developed and supported digital preservation repositories like Rosetta. Once such systems are instituted at enormous cost, will institutional units be required to submit all their local digital preservation materials? On the other hand, or on the other side of this question, we might well ask, will the prohibitive cost of establishing and maintaining those elaborate systems exclude the audio archive of a major institution from participating? Will library or university administrators refuse to back up high-resolution audio files and accept low-resolution access files as adequate? Will that challenge play out in a purely political manner? These questions might be resolved differently at every institution. Finally, we might ask, will the complexity of institutional digital repositories, their slow rate of development, and the certain volatility of the ongoing evolution of these systems demand an alternative backup, such as the AmDisk, for immediate local access to preservation materials? In addressing this final scenario, I offer two perspectives that may help predict the future. First, if we can take the past 20 years and the transitions that have occurred in commercial library-integrated systems, such as Notus, CRC Dynex, and Innovative, as an indication, I believe it is safe to predict that products such as Rosetta and OCLC's ContentDM will constantly evolve and change corporate ownership 4 to 5 times in the coming 20 years. I believe this will introduce its own migration and sustainability complexities independent of evolving digital formats. We see this all the time in the regular upgrades and corporate mergers of our library integrated systems. Second, I propose that a fixed in stone and time digital preservation copy may be preferable in the world of audio archives rather than the fluid systems advocated by the ARSC Technical Committee and the Sound Direction's best practices guidelines. There is, after all, something innate about that idea in the context of audio archives. Isn't that, in fact, the nature of our work and ultimate strategy for long-term audio preservation, that is, the never-ending quest to bring the historical past into the present and future? We always have and always will be in the business of passing on distinctive formats from one generation to the next. If time will permit, I welcome your comments and questions. Yes. Oh, okay. My apologies. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
When you tested the CDs, did you test or consider testing gold CDs?
They were gold CDs.
They were gold CDs?
Yes.
Having that deformation.
Yes. Yeah. And I cut it out of my paper because I was going a little bit over time, but they had a large project of backing up photographic images of Dead Sea Scrolls and the Herculaneum Scrolls as part of a project they were doing at BYU. And in the batches of DVDs and CDs that were created from 2002 to 2004, I think they were experiencing a 30% loss
of data.
DVDs and CDs are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's a concatenation of the two, it'd be interesting to know what the CD alone numbers.
Yeah, sorry, I don't have that specific data. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't understand the question fully.
Well, you've got one disk with your archival information. You're going to have more than one disk. And how many copies would you make of each archival piece, and how many sites would you have?
That's correct. I did not take into account that you would want to keep two copies of each, yeah, in different locations. Yeah. George. Fantastic. Goodness. Okay. That does put everything into a little bit different perspective. I wasn't aware of those. Yeah. Mike.
Not quite sure where to start, but I'll make just a couple of quick points. First, it's not just arts and sound directions here in the United States that are advocating certain ways of doing preservation of the visual domain, but also the IAZA International. So I think, in fairness, we need to say that there's an international community that's recommending certain procedures. So the IAZA TC03 and 04 in your first slide. These are important indications to do this as well. Second, those of us who are, and I should say, it was a very interesting presentation and some excellent points and some questions about preservation of the digital domain and preservation of repositories that I think lots of us have. This is, as I have said many times, a set of procedures that are really in their infancy and have much growth to occur. But those of us who are working in this area are not concerned only with degradation but obsolescence. I felt that obsolescence got a little bit of short shrift in your paper. In other words, if we're talking about long-term preservation, we're talking about very long-term. And I doubt that in 50 years there will be any DVD products to read with this like this. I think that's a huge issue that we need to address in looking forward.
And I'd like to add to that. I mean, we're talking about media. We're no longer talking about media. File-based domain. We're talking about obsolescence of formats. So I think, I mean, to we move out of what we'd like to have, which is an actively managed preservation environment. So moving to a physical thing that we put on a shelf it steps back a number of years in management of archives and where we'd like to, in the opposite direction, we'd like to move where we can need to stay on top of things like obsolescence monitoring and fixity.
I'll also add that an optical disk solution doesn't really scale very well for larger collections. How do you migrate that if you have 100,000 of these things? Somebody has to physically put the disk in a drive and monitor it being transferred. Maybe there will be an automated way to do that. I don't see that as yet. So that's also something to take into consideration.
I'd like to add, though, last year when we were at Culpeper, that the Library of Congress's vast digital system seems to be tape-based.
Yeah, well, it is, but it's a backup is tape-based.
But it is what?
Backup. Only the backup is tape-based. The second copy is.
And this is digital. This is a data tape. It is magnetic tape, but it's not audio tape. It's very different.
Right, yeah, but it still is tape.
No.
And it still is a physical object that needs to be loaded into a machine.
Well, they actually have giant libraries where the tape are in, so they're actively managed, actually. I mean, it's treated in much the same way as hard disk storage is in those libraries. It's just a bit slower, but same principles apply.
George.
The biggest concern that I would have with this is a dependency on
Great. Well, thanks for all those comments. I think we're out of time. I just want to say I'm really not trying to sell the product. I was just trying to raise some questions, and I really appreciate the responses that you all gave. Thank you.